A presence a little further, reaching, touch, she cried out. A matron! But there are no matrons left! The Naruk promised! The Kachin Chamal are destroyed!
She realized that she was shouting out loud and looked down into the wide eyes of the man kneeling at the edge of the stairs.
Return to the defenses! Have the onagers loaded! The Chamal will waste no time! They never do! Go!
Alone once more, Reverence closed her eyes, sought to slow the savage twin beats of her hearts that now seemed to clash in discordant panic.
Brother Diligence, hear my cry. We are deceived. The foe you face is but a feint. Ignore them. I summon you and as much of the army as you can relinquish. We face Kachin Chamal.
Releasing her power, she waited, breath held, for her brother's reply, and received nothing. With hooded eyes, Setok crouched atop a berm, facing upslope, and watched the descent of Brother Diligence.
This is not your place, she whispered. Can you feel that yet? The wolves have claimed this den you so kindly made for us, and here we will wait until the chosen time.
She pivoted and scanned the brothers and sisters. She could smell their distress rising up rank and sour from the maze of trenches, from these dusty holes carved down through stone and dead soil. Many were looking out across the width of the valley to where the Balkando and Lethary armies were even now beginning the descent. She saw how the soldiers reacted in dismay upon seeing no enemy element positioning itself at the center. Well, not all dismay. She saw quickly hidden expressions of relief, and the scent of that was a looser, thinner emanation.
When the wolf becomes you, you hear and taste and smell so much more, making vision seem like a lesser power, a weakling subject to blindness in the face of truths. No, it is better with the ghosts gathered within me now, so much better.
Down came Brother Diligence. And there was Tanakalian climbing into view, turning first to study the approaching Forkrel Asael and then facing Setok. He made his way closer, but not so close that should she leap, her fangs would find his throat. She noted that and was not surprised. Estrian Setok, we are about to be challenged, she bared her teeth. His face knotted in a scowl. Listen to me. It is of no use if you can do little more than lift hackles and growl. He will use Akrast Kovalain. Do you understand me?
And what is it about that to cause fear, Shield Anvil?
The Asael know nothing of the Kachin Chamal. Do you see? I have kept that from them.
Why?
It does us no good if the Asael win on this day, does it? She cocked her head.
It doesn't.
We remain balanced on the knife's edge, or have you forgotten? By what we do, by what we say or do not say, it all falls to us, here, now.
Shield Anvil,
she paused to yawn.
Shield Anvil, why did you banish the mortal sword?
She broke our holy vow, Destriant. I have already told you this.
By swearing fealty to this adjunct woman.
Yes.
And these Lethary and Balkando, they are her allies? This adjunct's allies?
She could see the growing frustration in the man and was unmoved. I told you this!
Do you fear Brother Diligence? I see that you do. Should he compel us? But, Shield Anvil, I want to know, which do you fear the most, the adjunct or the brother? Think of it as a contest, if that helps. Which one is it?
Tanakalian looked back up the slope to where Diligence was coming ever nearer to their earthen fort, and then back again. The adjunct is dead.
You do not know that. And besides, that doesn't matter. It's not relevant to the question I asked.
A sneer curled his lips. If it is a question of immediacy, then it must be Brother Diligence. His tone dripped venom, and she understood that as well. All the reasons, all the emotions raging back and forth in this man. Setok nodded, and then straightened from her crouch. She arched her back, stretched out her limbs.
Immediacy. It's such a lie. One is close, the other is far away. So fear more the one who is close. But, you see, there are two sides to immediacy. The one you're seeing is the one now, but there is another one, the one you only find at the end of things.
Tanakalian's eyes narrowed on her, and she could see that he was startled, that he was thinking, and thinking hard now.
So, Setok continued, let's forget the now for the moment and go to the end of things. At the end of things, Shield Anvil, whom will you fear the most? Yon brother Diligence or the Adjunct?
Hearing voices from the trenches, filled with surprise and something like excitement, she smiled and added,
or our mortal sword, who even now rides for us.
Suddenly white, Tanakalian climbed the nearest berm, faced the valley called Blessed Gift. For a dozen heartbeats, he made no move, and then he looked back down at Setok.
Where will you stand in this, Destriant? I stand with the wolves.
Triumph flashed in his eyes.
But, she continued, that is only half the question, isn't it?
He frowned.
You must then ask me, where stand the wolves?
He half snarled.
And all the beasts beneath now awaken,
and said,
I know well their position, Destriant. Well, Setok corrected, you thought you did.
She leapt down then, crossed the back edge of the fort to come opposite the narrow stepped track down which the Forkrel Asael was descending. Lifting her gaze, she held out her arms and shouted,
Brother, come no closer. You are not welcome here.
Diligence was still 50 or more steps away, but he halted in obvious surprise. She felt him awakening the sorcery in his voice. And in the moment that he released it, Setok opened her own throat to the howl of 10,000 ghost wolves. The sound was a detonation, rising up to slam Diligence down onto his back on the earthen steps. In the numbed silence that followed, Setok shouted again,
You are not welcome! Go back to your slaves, brother!
There was no sign that the Forkrel Asael had heard. He was lying sprawled on the track, unmoving. Shriven were rushing towards him from both sides and from above. In moments they had closed, and then were lifting him up, carrying him back up the steps. Satisfied, Setok turned round. The entire Perish army was facing her, every soldier. Among those closest to her, she saw blood at their ears and trickling down from nostrils. She saw faces that looked bruised and eyes shot with red. When Setok spread out her arms again, they visibly flinched back.
No foreign magic can compel us, she said, and then she pointed. The mortal sword approaches. We shall welcome her, and in the making of this day, we shall know our fates.
Destriant, someone shouted from one of the trenches. Who do we choose? Who do we follow?
Tanakalian wheeled round at that, but there was no way to find the speaker amidst the press.
I am Destriant of the Wolves, Setok replied. I am not a Grey Helm, not a sister to any of you. I am not one of your pack, and in this matter, who is to rule the pack is not for me to say.
Who do we fight? Destriant, who do we fight?
Setok dropped her gaze to Tanakalian just briefly, and then she answered,
Sometimes even wolves know the value of not fighting at all.
And there she had given him what he thought he would need for the challenge to come. Because Setok could smell that mortal sword and that woman.
That woman was a thing of war.
Inside, the ghost wolves huddled close, giving her their immeasurable warmth. The echoes of their howl whispered back and forth. Even they had been surprised at its power.
But I wasn't. This is my den, and we shall defend it.
Ears ringing at that holy cry, Krughava slowed her mount to a slow canter. Before her, lining the top of the front berm, stood her brothers and sisters, those she had known and loved for years. It was still too far for her to make out their expressions, to see if her arrival was welcome or cause for fury. But even the latter would not dissuade her. She was coming to fight for her people, and for all of Tanakalian's gleeful mocking of her belief in heroism, and indeed in heroism lay her one and only true faith, she knew that the next few moments would test her as no battle had ever done.
"If I am to be a hero, if I have such capacity within me, let it come now."
They said nothing when she reined in at the foot of the mound. Dismounting, Krughava looped the reins about the saddle's horn, pulled the horse round until it faced the valley once more, and with a hard slap on his rump, sent it on its way. Was the gesture lost on the witnesses?
No, it most assuredly was not.
Drawing off her helm, mortal sword Krughava swung round and looked up at her estranged brothers and sisters. She raised her voice.
"I would speak to Shield Anvil Tanakalian."
An old veteran replied in a toneless voice,
"He awaits you within. Come forward in peace, Krughava."
"They have not chosen a new mortal sword, but neither will they give me my old title. So then, it all remains to be decided. So be it."
A knotted rope slithered down the steep ramp side. She took hold of it and began climbing. Precious Thimble drew closer to Faint's side. They remained on the valley's ridge, watching the ranks of Lethary marching down into the basin. Far to their right, the Evertine Legion and its auxiliaries were doing the same.
"All that marching for this, this and only this. I'll never understand soldiers. Faint?"
"What is it, Precious? You're going to tell me that you can use all this power to carve us out a gate back home?"
She glanced over, studied the pale, round face.
"No, I thought not."
"What can you feel?"
Faint shrugged.
"My skin is crawling, and I'm no mage."
"Exactly. You have no idea how this is feeling. Even Ambi Bowl is a mass of nerves, though he won't talk to me anymore. I think he's become unhinged."
"He never was hinged in the first place," Faint cut in. "So what do you want from me?"
"That boy."
"What boy?"
"The one half swallowed up by that giant lizard. Who did you think I was talking about?"
Faint twisted kinks from her back, wincing.
"Fine. What about him? I'll grant you he's cute enough, but..."
"You think all this sorcery that's making us sick is coming from the Asael? You're wrong."
"What?"
Faint stared at Precious.
"Him?"
"It's only making us sick because he doesn't know what to do with it."
"He's Malazan, isn't he?"
"I don't think he's anything."
"What's that supposed to mean?"
But the witch's eyes were wide, staring at seemingly nothing.
"Can an idea find flesh? Bone? Does it have a face? Is that even possible? Can people build a savior with handfuls of clay and withered sticks? If their need for a voice is so terrible, so demanding, can a people build their own god, Faint? Tell me, have you ever heard such a thing? Has anyone ever even thought it?"
Faint reached out, pulled Precious Thimble round to face her.
"What in Hoot's name are you talking about? What do you see in that boy?"
Precious Thimble's face twisted.
"I don't know,"
she cried, pulling herself away. Faint turned, scanned the mass of troops. Where was he then, that strange boy? But the dust was rising in walls, slipping across like curtains in the hesitant wind tracking the length of the valley. She looked to the prince's command position, off to her left, but saw only mounted messengers, signalers, and the prince's staff. Her eyes narrowed on Atricida Erenict.
"Precious, come with me,"
she set out. The ghost of sweetest sufferance was suddenly walking at her side.
"You should listen to the witch, love."
Faint glared at the ethereal form, and then shot a look back over one shoulder, to see Precious trailing half a dozen paces behind, walking like a drunk.
"Sweetest,"
Faint whispered.
"How can I listen to her? She's talking nonsense." I'm just saying her ideas are intriguing. Maybe she's on the right track. I doubt that boy's even got a belly button. Have you looked? He's probably old enough for a roll in the grasses, a little schooling from Mistress Faint. What do you think? Can I watch? Just to see if he's got one, of course.
Breath hissed from between Faint's teeth.
Gospillow, I can't even see the runt. Besides, in case you hadn't noticed, this whole valley is about to erupt in a bloodbath, and you want me to tickle his damned sack? Never mind the whole belly thing, then. It was just a thought. I'm sure he's got one. Everyone does. Precious is panicking, that's all. When the Fulcral Assail unleash Akrast Corvalane, when they awaken that deadly voice, well, who's here to fight against that? Yon Atri Seda and Precious herself, and that's it? Is it any wonder she's gibbering? Stop talking, sweetest!
Faint was almost upon the Atri Seda. The woman was standing on the very edge of the descent into the valley, dragging on a rust-leaf stick as if it held the blood of immortality and eternal youth. And for all Faint knew, maybe it did.
Atri Seda!
Aranect turned, and almost immediately her eyes shifted past Faint, fixing on Precious Thimble.
Greetings, witch. Be so good as to awaken a circle round us, and I would ask that you add your talents to my efforts in the defence to come.
She pulled hard on the stick.
Failing that, we fall that much sooner.
Precious Thimble made a whimpering sound. Aranect's expression darkened.
Courage, child. Where is your boyfriend? We will need him here. He possesses a natural disinclination to sorcerous attacks.
Licking dust-dry lips, Faint cleared her throat.
Atri Seda, your words do not elicit confidence over the outcome of this battle.
Lighting another stick, Aranect waved one hand as if distracted. Sending a blast of smoke into the air, she said,
I would advise that you run, but then there is nowhere to run to.
She pointed with a hand visibly trembling.
See the prince, down there, on the horse behind the last ranks? That is the man I love, and he is about to die. Precious, listen to me. Defend this position with all that is within you, because all my power will be down there with him. Once the pure finds me, he will make every effort to shred me alive.
Faint took a step back, appalled by the heart-rending rawness of the woman standing before her. So much exposed, so much ripped open for all to see.
And yet, if I could find a love like that, if I could find such a love...
Aranect,
she now said in a soft voice, and something in the tone drew the Atri Seda round.
If I may, I will stand with you.
She saw Aranect's eyes widen and then flit away, as if she could no longer bear to see what was there in Faint's own face. The Atri Seda stared north.
He's not yet touched on his power, but it's only a matter of time.
He may not have to,
Faint said, following Aranict's gaze.
I don't know much about battles, but I can't see us winning this one.
We're not here to win,
Aranict replied.
We're just here to take a long time to die.
Precious Thimble moved past Faint then, mumbling chaining words under her breath. And there, 3 paces to the right, stood Ambi Bol, his face a stone mask, his hands clenched into scarred fists. And the ghost of sweetest sufferance spoke.
Faint, I hear an echo of something.
It's nothing,
Faint muttered in reply.
Nothing but the sound of all that we are about to lose. What is that sound like? When you hear it, you will know.
Bryce Bedict rode hard along the back of the reserve line. He wanted his soldiers to hear the hoofs of his horse behind them, wanted them to know he was there, so that they would understand that wherever they hesitated, he would ride to them. When they needed the strength of a commander's will, he would find them. Riding parallel to the ranks, he scanned the formations. Companies held tight in their rectangles, with broad avenues between them. Their discipline remained strong, resolute. There would be nothing subtle in the assault to come, and they had not yet wavered. Horns sounded from the front ranks to mark the last 50 paces from the enemy's forward earthworks. That forlorn cry sang through Bryce, and he almost faltered. Is she alive? Do we give our lives to a cause already lost? Is my last gesture to be an empty one? Oh, beloved brother, I could do with some encouraging words right now. Better yet, make me laugh. What more fitting way to meet that moment when you fall to your knees than with sweet, unchained laughter? The kind that lifts you into the air, high above the grim violence of the land and all its sordid cruelty. He was riding inward along the line now, the ranks on his left, and in moments he would come into the clearing opposite the parish-held centre, and before him, across the gap, he would see the Evertine Legion closing with the Colancy lines. Queen Abrastel, such a noble ally you have become. If my brother could but know of this, if your husband could witness this, some futures hold such promise as to convince you they can be nothing more than dreams, delusions built on wishful thoughts. You walk the steps of your life, and always that dream beckons, that dream waits. You don't know if it can ever be made real. You don't know that even should you somehow stumble upon it, you won't find it less than it was, less than it could have been. If only you could have kept that distance, kept it just outside arm's reach, forever shining, forever unsullied by the all-too-real flaws of your own making. Aranecht, how could you have given me such a thing? How could you have let me take it close, feel it here in my arms, so warm, so solid? When those dreams in that unreachable future suddenly rise up around you, how can you not be blinded to their truths? All at once it is here. All at once you are living in its very midst. Why then must you seek to pull away? He rode on, waiting for the roar of clashing weapons, waiting for the awakening of the power of the Fokrul Asael. And I must answer it, in the only way I know how. And when I am done, I know there will be nothing left of me. For so long he had not understood what he was meant to do, but now, with energies crackling the air, it had all come clear. Aranecht, my love, you now hold the best in me. I pray that, for you, it is enough. He bolted into the gap, soared on the reins of his mount, and swung round to face the massive earthen fort where waited the parish grey helms. But he could see nothing of what was happening behind the banked walls of earth. In the centre of the maze of trenches and berms, there was a broad marshalling area of packed earth cut with narrow slits to gather the blood of the wounded who would be brought here during the battle. Cutters waited standing close to stretchers, their faces smeared with ash to keep sweat from dripping into open wounds. Their sawing and cutting tools were laid out on skins beside leather buckets of steaming water. In all the trenches that Krughavr could see into, her blessed soldiers stood with their eyes fixed on her as she made her way towards the centre, where waited Shield Anvil Tanakalian, and, a dozen paces behind him, a young woman whom Krughavr had never seen before. There was something strange about her eyes, but the mortal sword could not yet determine what gave them such a disquieting regard. She was barely into womanhood, dressed in ragged deerskins, her hair long and ropey with filth, and the smile curving her lips looked faintly ironic. Krughavr ascended a ridged ramp and stepped out onto the hard ground. She set her helm down and drew off her gauntlets. Tanakalian spoke. "It is our hope, Krughavr, that you have come seeking to return to the fold, that you will fight with us on this day, that you will lead us in battle." She drew herself up, settling one hand on the pommel of her sword. "Yes, I would lead the Grey Helms in battle, Shield Anvil Tanakalian, but not against the Lethary or Balkando. Rather, I would our soldiers quit these trenches." She lifted her gaze, studied the avenues leading back up the slope, and scowled. "Do you not see what they have done? The Asael have made the Grey Helms a forlorn hope." Tanakalian sighed, tilting his head as he regarded her. "There is another way of seeing our position here, Krughavr. Simply put, Brother Diligence does not trust us. and you would prove to him that the Perish are as treacherous as he suspected.
Treachery? Now that is a curious thing, Shield Anvil. I am not surprised the Azael does not trust you, given your precedence.
The Shield Anvil's face flushed. The betrayal was yours, not mine. But have we not already been through all of this? The Grey Helms heard your arguments. They heard mine. They voted.
Krukhava looked round, hard expressions unyielding on all sides.
On this day, brothers and sisters, our allies will seek to break the tyranny of the Fokrul Azael. But that is not the only reason for this war. Indeed, it is the least of them. Hear me, all of you. Long ago, a foreign god was brought down to this earth. He was torn to pieces, but they would not let him die. No, instead, they chained him, as one would bind a wild beast, as one might chain a wolf. And so bound, so caged, that god has known nothing but unending pain and anguish. The gods feed upon him. The wretched among us mortals sip his blood in prayer. And these Fokrul Azael, they hold his heart in their cold, cruel hands. My brothers and sisters, on this day we shall seek to shatter those chains. We shall seek to free the fallen god. But more than that, we shall endeavor to return him to his realm.
She pointed upslope.
And yet, where do you stand? Why, you stand at the side of torturers, and all the words of justice they so eagerly whisper in your ears, they are nothing but lies.
The young woman came forward then, and Krukhava saw now what gave her gaze such strangeness.
Wolf eyes. One silver, one amber. Blessed throne, she is our destriant. The wolves of winter look out from those eyes. Where had she come from?
The destriant spoke in the lethary trader tongue.
Mortal sword, we are stirred by your words. But then, what do we know of mercy? We who have never felt its gentle touch. We who are hunted and ever hunted down. Shall I tell you of the memories rushing through me now? Will you hear my words?
Krukhava felt the blood draining from her, the heat of her passion stealing away. Beneath her heavy armor, she was suddenly cold.
This woman is my foe. Tanakalian is as nothing compared with her. Destriant, I will hear your words.
The young woman looked round.
In your mind, see a herd, so many, great, strong beasts, and they see us running beside them or standing off in the distance. They see our shaggy heads sink low. Yet to all their nervous attention, we are indifferent. Our eyes study the beasts. We seek scents on the wind. And when at last we drive that herd into flight, whom do we single out? Which of these great, terrible animals do we choose?
Tanakalian answered with unfeigned excitement.
Destriant Setok, the wolves ever choose the weakest among the herd, the old one, the wounded one.
Krukhava stared at Setok.
The wolves would feed on this day, Destriant, upon the heart of the crippled god?
Setok gestured, a loose wave of one hand.
Tell your allies, ignore us in this battle. We'll not leave this nest, and when this day is done, we shall see who remains standing. It does not matter which of you has won, for you will be bleeding, your head will be hanging, you will be on one knee.
And then shall the Grey Helms strike, cried out Tanakalian. Can you not see the truth of this, Krukhava? Are you so blind as to still hold to your foolish conceit?
Krukhava was silent. After a long moment, wherein the only sounds came from the advancing armies on the plain, she approached the Shield Anvil, halting only when she stood directly before him.
Tanakalian, she said in a low rasp, we are not wolves. Do you understand? When we act, we are privileged or cursed to know the consequences. The wolves of winter are not.
They have no sense, no sense at all of the future. There can be no worship of the wild, Shield Anvil, without the knowledge of right and wrong.
Tanakalian shook his head, avid pleasure gleaming in his eyes.
You have lost this, Krughava. You cannot win. It is not just me anymore, is it? Not even just the Perish. Now you face a Destriant, and through her our very gods.
That child is mad, Tanakalian.
I do not fear her, Krughava.
That struck her as an odd thing to say. Deeply shaken, she lifted her gaze, studied Setok.
Destriant, shall this be the only game the wolves play?
This game they know well.
Krughava pushed past Tanakalian, pushed him out to the side, no longer important, no longer relevant.
Yes, they do, don't they? The glory of the hunt, yes? I will speak to the wolf gods now, and they would do well to hear me.
Shouts from the Perish Greyhelms, offended, indignant, shocked, but Setok simply shrugged. Krughava drew a deep breath. The ground was trembling beneath her now, and in moments the forces beyond this fort would collide.
You wolves think yourselves masters of the hunt, but have you not seen? We humans are better at it. We're so good at it that we have been hunting down and killing you for 500,000 years. But we're not content with just the weak among you or the wounded. We kill every damned one of you. It may be the only game you know, but hear my words. You're not good enough at it.
She advanced on Setok now and saw the Destriant flinch back.
I have found my moment. I see the comprehension in her eyes. The wolves of winter have heard me. They finally understand. Let me show you another way. Let me be your mortal sword once again.
But it was not the wolf gods who understood. It was only Setok. And in the moment before the wolf gods poured through her, she spun round in her mind.
No, heed her words. Can you not see the truth? You cannot hunt here.
But then they were upon her, tearing her apart in their frenzy to reach through, to close jaws on the hated human.
No, I loved you. I wept for you.
She screamed, and it was the last sound Setok ever made. Krughava's eyes widened upon seeing the woman's face transform into something unhuman. The flesh of her arms burst as the bones seemed to twist their way free, black tendons writhing like serpents. Her body stretched, the shoulders hunching, the eyes flared. Shrieking, she launched herself at the mortal sword. Fangs, welters of boiling blood and thick saliva, a sudden burgeoning of mass, black-furred, looming huge before her, and then a figure slipped past Krughava. Tanakalian.
Forgotten Tanakalian.
His knife flashing, the blade plunging deep into Setok's chest. A deafening howl thundered, staggering Krughava back. Blood sprayed from Setok's eyes. She leapt away from the knife, suddenly flailing, groping blind. Another howl sounded, battering the air. Dark blood spilling down from her mouth and nose, the woman fell onto her back on the earthen steps and then curled up like a child. Krughava stumbled forward.
Tanakalian, what have you done?
He had been thrown to the ground by that terrible death cry, but now he clambered back to his feet, the knife still in his hand. The face he turned to Krughava horrified her.
This was supposed to be my day, not yours, not hers. I am the hero, I am.
Tanak,
this is my day, mine.
He rushed her. She threw up an arm, but the gore-smeared blade slipped beneath it, punched hard, stabbing through her neck from one side to the other. Krughava fell back, struggling to stay on her feet, and then pitching round to land hard on one knee. The side of her face where the hilt had struck throbbed. She could feel that. One hand reached up, collided with the leather-bound grip. The knife was still stuck through her throat, and her lungs were filling with blood. She opened her mouth, but could draw no breath. Tanakalian was shrieking.
They were coming through! I couldn't allow that! The Asael! The Asael! He would have taken them! He would have killed them!
She fought back to her feet, dragging free her sword. Seeing her, he backed away.
I saved our gods! You fool! You killed one of them! Did you not hear it die?
The world was growing black on all sides. Her chest was heavy, as if someone had poured molten lead down into her lungs.
Blessed wolves! I did not intend this foul murder, this day so sordid, so human.
Rearing upright, blood pouring down her chin, Krughava advanced. Tanakalian stared at her, frozen in place.
We needed her out of the way, don't you see? Don't you?
Her first swing smashed into his right side, shattering ribs, slicing through the lung before jamming halfway through his sternum. The blow lifted him from the ground, flung him 3 paces to the right. Astonishingly, he landed on his feet, scattering the cutters. Blood and unidentifiable pieces of meat were spilling from the enormous cut in his chest. Krughava closed again.
Enough for one more. Enough!
Her second swing took off the top half of his head, the blade slicing across just beneath his eyes. The broken bowl spun over the slick back of her blade, then off to one side, loosing the brain it held and, with it, both eyes, swinging on their stalks. What remained of Tanakalian then pitched forward, landing on his chin. She sank down onto her knees. All breath was gone. The world roared in her skull. Someone was at her side, fumbling with the knife still thrust through her neck. She feebly pushed the hands away and then fell forward. Her face settled against the hard clay. And there, a gouged furrow, no wider than a knuckle, running out from under her eyes. She watched it fill with blood.
I wanted a better death. But then, don't we all?
2 thunderous howls erupted in quick succession from the Perish position, their ferocity plunging Bryce Bedick's horse into a blind panic. He was almost thrown from the lunging, terrified animal, but then he managed to set his heels in the stirrups, drawing tight the reins. The horse bucked, and then, unexpectedly, it ran straight towards the fort's high bank. He looked to the top edge of the high-banked wall, but he could see no Perish soldiers watching him, no one preparing for his arrival. He saw no one at all. Bryce eased the reins. There was no fighting this bolting beast, not yet. He rose in the saddle as the animal tackled the slope. The ascent was steep, uneven, and the straining effort burned out the horse's fear as it lunged upward. Reaching the top of the berm, Bryce checked his mount's advance, pulling on the reins hard enough to make the animal rear once more. His heels took his own weight as he shifted to take the movement, his eyes already studying the array of faces turned now towards him. Where was Krughava? Where were all the officers? He saw the nearest grey helms, almost directly below in the first trench, reaching for their pikes. Swearing, Bryce wheeled his horse round while it still stood high on its hind legs, sent it stumbling back down the slope. Stones and clouds of dirt followed the frantic descent.
Gods, they could have ended this for me right then. Wasn't anyone watching?
No, they had all been facing the other way. I caught them completely by surprise. What was happening in that camp? He suspected that he would never know. He was riding across level ground again, his horse's hoofs kicking through the dusty plough tracks, and ahead and to his right, his leathery soldiers had reached the first of the earthworks. Behind the companies, crews swarmed to position the heavy onagers, driving wedges beneath the front runners to lift the arc of fire. The enemy had begun releasing their own salvos of heavy bolts from raised fortlets flanking the trenches. Those deadly quarrels tore deep gashes into the advancing ranks. His soldiers had begun dying.
Because I asked them to. Dying in the name of a failed wish. I have brought them to this. But why? Why do they follow? They are no more fools than I am. They know my title means nothing. It is an illusion. No, worse, a delusion. Nobility is not something you can wear like a damned cloak of jewels. You can't buy it. You can't even be born into it. The nobility we talk about is nothing but a mockery of all that it used to mean. By no measure am I noble. Why do you follow?
Gods, why do I presume to lead into this? Bryce Bedict drew his sword, but the taste of ashes filled his mouth. So many conceits gathering here, crowding this moment and all the moments to come. Now then, shake yourself awake, Bryce. The time has come to find us a name.
He twisted his horse round, headed for the nearest avenue between companies, and rode to meet the enemy. High Cutter Syndican was still kneeling beside the body of Krughava, staring down into her pale, lifeless visage. In the clearing behind him, all the officers and veterans had gathered, and the arguments were raging fierce on all sides. Horror, shock, and confusion. The parish was moments from tearing itself apart. Syndican was the eldest among them all, a veteran of many campaigns, a soldier in the long, hopeless battle that was staunching wounds, breathing life into dying lungs. And once more, he could only sit silent, looking down at yet another of his failures.
She came among us, a brave, brave woman. We all knew her pride was ever her enemy. But see here, she came to us. Imagine how doing that must have stung that pride. And yet, even over this powerful flaw within her, she finally triumphed. What could be more heroic than that?
When at last he straightened, though in truth it was no more than 30 heartbeats since Krughava's fall, all the voices fell away. He was the veteran. He was the one they would now turn to, desperate for guidance.
Oh, all you fools! What to do? What to do now?
He cleared his throat.
I do not know what has happened here. I do not know if the Shield Anvil slew a young woman or a god, nor can I judge his reasons for doing so. This is beyond all of us.
A young soldier called out,
Brother Syndican, do we fight this day?
He'd been thinking about that from the moment of Krughava's fall, and he recalled looking across to the hacked corpse of Tanakalian and thinking,
You are only what we deserved. Brothers, sisters, on this day, yes, we must fight.
Silence answered him. He had expected as much. They would not follow blindly, not any more.
Not after this. Brothers, sisters, there's been murder in our fold. We were witness to it, and in witnessing we are made part of this crime. We must be cleansed. Today we must fight to regain our honor.
But who is the damned enemy?
And here the old veteran found himself at an impasse.
Wolves help me, I don't know, and I'm not the one to decide. Veteran, am I? Yes, but the only wise veterans are the ones who have left war and killing behind them. No, I'm just the biggest fool among you all. Oh, fine then. Time to fall back on useless superstition. Isn't that what old soldiers turn to when all else fails? Brothers, sisters, we must seek a sign. We must look to the world, here and on this day. We must...
And then his eyes widened, faces turned, eyes stared. As the Prince of Letha lunged into view atop the high berm at the fort's facing wall, surging up and on to the narrow, ragged edge, and how the horse found purchase there was a mystery. That beast then reared, hoofs scything the air, with the prince glaring down at them all. And at that moment, from either side of the valley's length, came the sound of battle's clash.
Gods take me. I think I just pissed my breeches.
Abrastel sat astride her charger. The beast felt thin beneath her, but was still quivering in anticipation.
Bastard loves this. The stench of blood, the screams, wants at them. God's war is a fever.
She glanced back at Spax and his mass of warriors.
Hold them, war chief. Wait for it.
The Gilk Bargast glared up at her.
But how long? Your damned soldiers are dying on that front. At least let us charge and take out one of the fortlets. Those onagers are carving you bloody.
She knew that,
She could see the terrible casualties those perfectly emplaced weapons were delivering as her legions struggled to overrun the first line of defenses.
I said, wait, Spex. I will need you and the Teblor to move fast when that Essail finds out.
But what if it's all gone wrong at the spire? Firehair, we can collapse this flank. Just let us loose, damn you!
But something had caught her eye. She wheeled her mount round, stared towards the center.
Jekan's fat cock! The Perish are pouring out of their trenches! Spex!
I see them! Do you see Krughava?
Abrastel shook her head.
They're too far away. Listen, form a line to hold our inside flank, Warchief. If I was commanding that position and saw it uncontested, I'd do precisely what they're doing right now. Out and into our unprotected sides.
They'll see us!
Spex was now at her side, a heavy axe in his hand, a spear in the other, his face half hidden by his ornate shell helm.
And wheel round to bite the leathery flank. Bryce has no reserves to guard against them.
If they do that, Abrastel said in a snarl, you know what to do, Spex.
Climb up their hairy asses, yes, but
just ready your warriors,
she cut in, and then jabbed her spurs into her mount's sides.
I'm going for a closer look.
Not too close!
She pushed her horse into a canter, the beast's armor cladding a weaponsmith's clamor around her. When four bodyguards rode to join her, she waved them back. She hated the fools, worse than hens, but the one messenger who drew close, she gestured forward. Beyond the Perish, the leathery army had locked jaws with the first line of defenders, but they too were being savaged by the Colansi onagers. She saw that the prince had deployed his own artillery, and the rate of fire from these heavy weapons was superior to the enemy's. At least three positions were concentrating fire on the nearest fortlet, and the raised redoubt was studded with heavy quarrels. Foot archers and skirmishers had advanced under the cover of that counterfire and were now assaulting the position. The prince knew his business, but would it matter? Already the losses were appalling, and she knew her own Evertine soldiers were suffering the same behind her. And now these Perish. A part of her wanted to sink her teeth into the throat of the Grey Helms. For all that betrayal and treachery thrived in the court games of the Balkando Kingdom, out here it was a far deadlier indulgence.
Maybe this is teaching me a lesson about backstabbing, lying, and cheating to get your way. No, try as I might, I can't swing it across. The palace is my world, and I'll run it the way I like.
Hoofs thundering, she was fast closing on the Perish. The soldiers were smoothly forming up now that they'd cleared the fort, and she saw them wheeling to face her.
You want us first, do you? Spex will be so pleased.
But that wasn't tactical. No, clearly they should have swung to face the leathery. And as she drew yet closer, the front ranks before her made no effort to draw weapons.
Can it be? Has Krughava won them over? Where is she? Where is Tanakalian? Erent's Nudge, who's commanding this army?
Abrastel waved up the messenger.
Stay close until we're within earshot, and then halt yourself. I will ride on. Listen well to this parley, soldier. The lives of thousands may well count on it, should I fail to win clear.
The young woman, selected for her riding ability, was pale beneath the rim of her helm, but she nodded.
Your eyes are better than mine. Do you see a commander anywhere?
Highness, there is one, with the grey face. He has been gesturing, sending out orders. There!
And she pointed.
I see him. What's with the face paint?
He's a cutter, Highness. A field medic.
Whatever. No matter. Looks as if he's the one wanting to talk. I don't like this. What has happened to Krughava?
They slowed to a canter, and at the appropriate distance the messenger halted, whilst the queen trotted forward. She studied the cutter. An old man, at least insofar as these grey helms went. His face was well worn with tracks of sorrow and loss, and she saw nothing in that face to suggest that anything had changed in his outlook. Her unease deepened. The cutter raised a hand in greeting.
Highness, the grey helms welcome you. I am Syndican, elected commander following the tragic deaths of the mortal sword and the shield anvil.
Abrastel felt her jaws clench. The words had struck like a blow to her chest. "Leave it, woman. Now is not the time." "You are arrayed. State your intentions, Syndican. As you can see, we've got us a fight here, and I really cannot waste any more time while you decide which way the fucking wind's blowing." The man recoiled as if slapped, and then he drew a deep breath and slowly straightened.
"The Perish Greyhelms humbly place themselves under the command of you and Prince Bryce."
He made a faint gesture to the troops behind him.
"We face you because we could not determine the whereabouts of the prince. Highness, the pure Forkrel Asael was injured in a clash with our Destriant. It is safe to assume, however, that he will recover. And when that happens, we anticipate an awakening of dire sorcery."
"Can you defend against it?"
The old man shook his head. "I fear not, Highness. We have lost our place as the weapon of the wolf gods. You see us as we are, simple soldiers seeking to regain our honor as men and women. That and nothing more."
"As soon as that pure is made aware of the attack on the spire, he will disengage as many soldiers as he feels he can spare."
"We understand this, Highness."
"Are your soldiers rested, Syndican? Can you fast trot down this valley and find an undefended ascent?" She made her voice louder, addressing the soldiers waiting behind the cutter. "Greyhelms, can you stand in the path of the Colansi, who will soon drive east to the spire?" In answer, the soldiers shipped their shields onto their backs, began tightening straps. Abrastel grunted. "Who needs words?" Syndican spoke.
"Do you require that we delay the enemy or stop them in their tracks?"
"There are not enough of you to stop them, Commander, and you know it. If I can, I will spare you my Bargast and the Teblor, but they may be arriving late to the fight."
"We shall hold until they arrive, Highness."
Abrastel hesitated and then called, "What I've seen of you thus far, Perish, has been sticks up the ass and plenty of proper marching and not much else. Well, now's your chance to show the world what you can do in a real fight." They seemed to weather this either in humility or in shame. She had expected a wave of anger, but saw not a single spark. Her gaze fell once more to the cutter. "Syndican, you'll need to work hard at inspiring this lot. They're broken."
"Yes, Highness, we are. But on this day, I believe that this is no weakness. We shall answer the world."
She studied him for a moment longer and then collected her reins.
"I trust you'll forgive my Bargast if they face you while you pass."
The man simply nodded.
"Fare you well, then. If justice truly exists, perhaps your mortal sword will stand with you, if only in spirit. Seek to match her measure, all of you, and perhaps you will indeed find your honor once more."
Dragging her mount round, she set off. The messenger fell in alongside her. Abrastel glanced over. "You've the lighter burden here. Ride ahead and inform Warchief Spax that the Perish march to take position in the expected path of the Colansi relief force. They will pass south of our position at a fast trot, but he is to face his warriors on them the entire time. Repeat my words back to me." The messenger did so without error. "Ride then, go." Abrastel watched the younger woman swiftly pulling away. "Was I ever that young? It's the curse of nobility that we must be made to grow up all too fast. But then, look at you. Tits barely budding, and you're in the middle of a damned war. And I can't even remember your name. But should we both survive this, I'm sending you to learn embroidery, and a year or two of flirting with artists and musicians and other ne'er-do-wells." Growling under her breath, the Queen of Balkando shook her head, rose in her saddle to glare at the forward lines of her beloved legion. They'd yet to even take the first entrenchments, and that slope was a mass of dead and dying soldiers, getting deeper with every moment that passed. "Erentz Tug, they've got us by the balls here. We need to push harder. No let up on this pressure. Time for the Safi, then. Assuming they've gotten all yellow-eyed on that brave spit they guzzle before battle, they should be well primed." But were they all doing little more than going through the motions? 14th daughter, can you hear me? Thought not. I could use your eyes right now, just to see where things stand over there. You should be in the damned bay by now. You should be in a good position to witness everything. Once more she shook her head, too many things in her damned skull. Her horse was tiring, and she slowed her pace a fraction. She might need one more charge out of this beast. The queen takes the sword and shows her face beneath the mask. But the world does not tremble as it should, for the mask only comes off in the face of death. Husband, dear me, your wife strayed too far this time. She drew her sword as she closed. The Safi commander was standing to the right of the royal entourage, his eyes upon her, as were the eyes of virtually everyone else. She pointed her sword directly at him, saw him suddenly straighten as if in delight, raising his spear in one hand, and then he was moving, his tall, dark figure speeding across the ground, back to his troops. And she saw them now, too, leaping and dancing in a frenzy of excitement. Oh, Khaleesi, you have no idea what is about to hit you. Captain Feveran, 9th cohort of the Evertine Legion, slid back down the slope on a greasy mass of bodies, swearing all the way down to the base, where he was thrown up against the shins of the soldiers struggling to do what he'd just tried. He'd lost sight of his own troops, those that remained alive, but such details barely mattered now. The only cohesion left was the one that defined the living from the dead. This was slaughter. Twice they had momentarily overrun the first trench, only to be thrown back by indiscriminate fire from ranks of onagers, the huge quarrels tearing through multiple bodies, blood and gore exploding in torrents, men and women flung about like rag dolls. Shields shattered with impacts, breaking the shoulders behind them, driving soldiers down to their knees. The bank of the first berm was a ceaseless mudslide of all that could spill out from a human body, streaming over pale limbs, over staring, sightless faces, ruptured armor and tangled embraces. Cursing, he struggled to find his feet again. He could feel another push coming from the ranks pressing against him, and wanted to be in a position to ride that tide upward. They were going to take that damned trench no matter. But the Evertine infantry were being jostled, the solid lines broken apart, and Feveran swore upon seeing tall Safi pushing through, their eyes bright yellow with that infernal drug they took before battle, the froth thick on their lips. "Clear paths!" the captain bellowed. "Clear paths!" But the command was not needed. Nothing would stop the Safi spear-wielders, not this close to the enemy. Lighter armored, lithe and fleet of foot, the warriors seemed to clamber like spiders up the slope of the berm. In one hand they held their spears, and in the other a pick of some sort, its business end a splay of talon-like hooks that they swung down into dead and dying flesh alike, pulling themselves yet higher. In moments the first line of Safi had reached the top and over and out of sight. The screams from the first trench intensified.
"Follow!" bellowed Feveran. "Follow!"
And up they went. Somehow they'd lifted him to his feet, but his mind remained lost in a deafening roar. Brother Diligence raised his head, struggled to find his balance. Officers surrounded him, healers crowded close, and from a great distance the sounds of battle took hold of the air above the valley, shaking it without pause. He sought to make sense of the cacophony in his head. He heard screams, horrified screams, rising in waves of panic and dread. But even that seemed far away.
Far away, yes. That voice, so far away.
Abruptly, he shoved his helpers from his side, and then staggered as at last he could make out the words, the sources of those desperate screams.
Sister Reverence!
Her answer came in a savage torrent.
Brother Diligence, your battle is faint. We are attacked. Kachain Chimal, Tlanimas, we cannot hold. God's the slaughter.
He silenced her hard as a slap.
You must hold, sister. We are coming.
Looking around, he saw the panic in the eyes of the watered. They had felt her, had heard her frantic cries.
"Attend!" he bellowed. "Maintain the defences of the two lowest tiers. The rest are to withdraw to the high road. They must march east to the spire with all haste. Weapons and armour and one skin of water and nothing more. You have one bell to get 25,000 soldiers on the road."
"Blessed Pure, the Perish have betrayed us!"
He waved a dismissive hand.
"Leave them. I shall awaken Akrast Corvalane. I shall obliterate the enemies before us. Wait! I want the forces on our left to counterattack. Lock on to the enemy flank. I want those Balkando and Bargast driven from the field. Now, clear me a path down to the second tier."
The world seemed to be trembling beneath his feet. As he made his way down, choosing the right flank, he quickly scanned the battle before him. The damned Lethary fought as if blind to defeat, and they would be defeated, of that there was no doubt. Even without his voice, they could not hope to overrun his defences.
"But I want them on their knees, empty-handed, heads bowed, and my soldiers shall rise from the trenches and walk among them, their weapons swinging. Not one Lethary shall leave this place, not one. And when I have driven them down, I shall turn to the other flank. It is stronger, I can see that. The white faces remain in reserve, but none there can hope to stop me. They will be held in place by the counterattack. I will have them all."
Almost directly below, he saw a tight mass of Lethary, a standard waving above them, and there, to his amazement, two Kachane Chimal. Vergath's soldiers, one being ridden by a scale-armored figure, the other revealing an empty saddle. They were flanking a lone Lethary on a horse, a man struggling to form the tip of a wedge pushing its way up the first berm.
"The Kachane Chimal we shall have to cut down the hard way, and Sister Reverence faces an army of these creatures. We were complacent. We were fools to think them without cunning. Are they not humans, after all? I see you, Commander. I will take you first. The first to kneel, the first to submit to execution."
He continued his rapid descent of the earthworks, feeling his warren awakening within him. Below, Lethary sorcery crackled in a grey wave, swept up and over an onager redoubt. Bodies erupted in crimson mists. Furious, Diligence reached out, found a handful of squad mages. With a single word, he crushed their skulls. Reaching a ramp, he made his way across and took position atop the second tier. Across a distance less than a bowshot, the Lethary commander had attained the top of the berm, his Vergath clearing a path with vicious, sweeping strokes of their halberds that sent bodies spinning through the air.
"I see you!" roared Diligence.
Bryce Bedict felt his horse crumpling under him, and as he flung his feet clear of the stirrups and twisted to evade the falling beast, he saw an enormous quarrel driven deep into its chest. Landing in a crouch, he readied his blood-smeared sword. The trench below was a mass of Colancy infantry, pikes thrust upward and awaiting their descent. On either side of the prince, the Vergath were fending off flanking counterattacks, and their ferocity forced the breach yet wider. The moment he straightened, three shouted words struck him like a fist, snapping his head back, and all at once he was under siege. The Forkerel Asael had found him.
"At last, you saw. You saw and wanted me first. Oh, friend, you are most welcome to me."
He rose under the barrage, lifted his head, and met the eyes of the Pure.
"I see you. Kneel, yield to my will."
"You see me? Tell me, Asael, whom do you see?"
"I will command you. I will take all that is within you."
Bryce Bedict, King's Champion and Prince of Lether, spread open his arms and smiled.
"Then have me,
and from his soul